From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. Half of people behind bars suffer from addiction, an illness that may be the cause of their legal troubles. We look at two efforts to connect those in jail or on their way out to treatment. In Washington County, nonviolent offenders can transition from jail to home detention and receive addiction treatment in the form of a monthly shot. And outside the Baltimore City Detention Center, a mobile clinic awaits the newly released. The program's director tells us about signing up their first client for medication-assisted drug treatment.
He came over from drug court. He had only been in jail, like many people, for less than 24 hours. And now he's in treatment with us.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at WYPR.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@WYPR.org.
Good morning. I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. As the nation grapples with the rising toll of opioid addiction, an estimate by the nonprofit Open Society Institute finds that in Maryland, every dollar invested in treating addiction saves $12 in reduced crime and lower costs for criminal justice and health care. The U.S. Department of Justice reports that half of state and federal prisoners suffer from addiction. Today, we're looking at two efforts to reach a group of people particularly vulnerable to overdose, those who have been in jail. We asked the Maryland Department of Public Safety and Correctional Services and the Department of Health to participate in this conversation, but they declined. Later, we'll hear about a healthcare nonprofit that waits outside the walls of the Baltimore City Detention Center to offer people drug treatment upon release. Up first, Washington County is connecting some people who have been sent to jail to drug treatment, housing assistance, job placement, and other services. It's the state's first adult day reporting center, funded by Governor Hogan after a recommendation by the Heroin and Opioid Emergency Task Force. Rebecca Hogemeyer directs the Washington County Sheriff's Office Day Reporting Center, and she joins us by phone to tell us about it. Rebecca, welcome to On the Record.
Hello.
Who is eligible to participate in this program?
Individuals that reside in Washington County, that have a residence in Washington County, individuals that are sentenced by a sitting Washington County judge, and individuals that have a primary substance abuse disorder. That's what brought them into the criminal justice or the detention center. It could be that they had a possession charge, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they have to have a possession charge. They could have a theft charge, and they were stealing to buy their drugs. And finally, they cannot have a crime, a past or current crime of violence that would disqualify the individual.
So this transfer, participants go from jail to a form of modified home detention. They are required to attend programs at the Day Reporting Center. What do they do there?
A typical day would be that the individual would report for group at 9 o'clock. We ask them to come a half an hour early so they can check in and provide a specimen for drug testing. And so then their group starts at 9 o'clock, and they are in group until noon. And then they will meet individually with the reentry coordinator, the nurse practitioner for a health visit. They would meet with the case manager to talk about getting a primary care physician and getting maybe their driver's license back. Maybe they need their Social Security card. Maybe they need to get enroll in for Maryland's medical assistance. They also may have an individual counseling session. So they repeat that 5 days a week. And on the sixth day, they come in for group because of phase one. They report six times a week. They will attend an emotional literacy group, a two-hour group on Saturdays. And it's really a peer-led program where they look at healing the individual emotionally.
Over time, the number of times a week that they report to the Center for Services and Drug Testing tapers off, and they take on the responsibility of a job. What types of jobs?
In the first phase, they report 6 times a week, and we really discourage anybody obtaining employment in the first phase because we want to really have them acclimate themselves to the program, and it's pretty intense, and we don't want to overwhelm them. When they move into phase two, they are allowed to obtain employment. And we work really hard to place them in the most appropriate employment that meets, that matches their skill set. We do not want them to go out and just get a job. We want them to start looking at a career. We work with Manpower, Goodwill, and Western Maryland Consortium to place individuals in the community. So, for instance, we have somebody that really enjoys working with cars and has worked with cars and likes to be a mechanic. So then we will work with that individual and place them in that similar field. We just don't say go out there and find any job. We want you to find a job that is going to sustain your life.
That's Rebecca Hogemeyer, Program Director of the Washington County Sheriff's Office Day Reporting Center, an alternative to incarceration that offers drug treatment, counseling, and job placement to nonviolent offenders. You've been operating about a year. How many people are participating?
Right now we have 37 individuals in the program. It was a little slow getting started because it takes some time to educate the judges and the defense bar and the state's attorney about what would be the most appropriate person to recommend to this program.
How many people have completed the program?
7 individuals have completed the program. There are several, I think about 5 of them are waiting for modification. And
what does that mean, waiting for modification?
Modification means that they are moving them from incarcerated status and no longer under the custody of the detention center. So there's 3 avenues that could take place. They could be on supervised probation, unsupervised probation, or their active sentence would end with that modification.
Substance abuse treatment is a big focus of this program. Is the treatment primarily for opioid addiction?
I would say 95% of the individuals that are attending have a diagnosis of opioid dependence. The remaining are a combination of alcohol or cocaine.
And you talked about group sessions and that kind of therapy. Is there also medically assisted treatment for addiction?
Yes, the program offers medication-assisted treatment using Vivitrol, and only Vivitrol.
Vivitrol comes in the form of a monthly shot. How does Vivitrol treat drug addiction?
Well, Vivitrol is an antagonist. An antagonist blocks the receptor sites, and so it does not allow the individual to experience euphoria if they do take an opiate. And it's been my experience. I've been working with Vivitrol and the medication-assisted treatment since 2011. So individuals will relapse. The difference I see in an individual on Vivitrol and an individual on not on Vivitrol is those who are taking Vivitrol, their relapse is episodic, and they get back on track and remain engaged in treatment.
What if somebody has a positive drug test while they're in the program? What happens?
So individuals that, and they do test positive occasionally, we come together as a team and we do an intervention and work on problem solving, how we can prevent future relapses, what do they need from the program that they're not getting. They do get consequences for the first offense. They will get 14 days extension on their phase before they're eligible for phase advancement. The second offense, they restart whatever phase that relapse occurred in. The third incident, most often they are returned to the jail for 30 days, and during that 30 days, the team meets and discusses whether or not we should readmit that individual.
What have you heard from participants about the impact of this program?
At first, they're really resistant. They don't need this program. They just want to get out of jail. But as time goes on, they were having a hard time adjusting to people caring about them. And so the things that they have said is that nobody ever cared. No one ever showed an interest. This program's really helped me. I couldn't have accomplished all of this on my own. So we work through the barriers with them. And sometimes I think if I was to be incarcerated and released and had no job, no house, no identification, no Social Security card, no insurance, I don't know what I would do. I'm not sure I could make it in a community that it seems like everything was stacked against you. So what I see the program doing is little by little we remove those barriers. And as they overcome the barriers, they become more confident. And then they start advocating for themselves, which they didn't think they had a right to.
It's very exciting. I appreciate your telling us about it. Thank you.
Thank you for having me talk to you.
Rebecca Hogemeyer is Program Director of the Washington County Sheriff's Office Day Reporting Center, an alternative to incarceration that offers drug treatment and other services to nonviolent offenders. This is On the Record. Quick break, and when we're back, a chance at drug treatment is waiting to snag those on their way out of the Baltimore City Detention Center. We'll find out more. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking this morning about the challenges of addiction for people behind bars. More than 1,000 people have died in Maryland from opioid overdoses in just the first 6 months of 2017. People who've just been released from jail are particularly vulnerable to overdose. Since they haven't been feeding their habit, their tolerance for opioids has dropped. What if there were a way to connect those leaving jail to care right on the spot? What if doctors, nurses, social workers, and peer coaches were waiting outside the jail with open arms? Deborah Akis is executive director of the nonprofit Behavioral Health Leadership Institute, which delivers mental health and substance abuse treatment to people who are underserved, vulnerable, and at risk. Welcome to On the Record.
Thank you.
The Behavioral Health Leadership Institute works with partner organizations across the city, such as Dee's Place and Bon Secours Next Passages program, to deliver treatment. And one of the newest sites is outside the Baltimore City Detention Center's discharge door on Eager Street. What led you to set up outside the jail?
We've recognized the problem for a long time. Some of our persons that we work with at Dee's Place or our other sites or just in general do go in and out of the jail, unfortunately, and they are not allowed to get treatment in jail, and then they have to re-begin when they get out. And we are looking always for the best place to meet people who have a problem, to meet them where they are, so that we can increase access to treatment for substance use, specifically for heroin use or opioid use disorder. So we looked for a way to partner with the jail. We can't provide services in the jail right now. They don't allow buprenorphine or Suboxone in the jail. And so we were looking for any way that we could get in. And we are always thinking about how to just be as accessible as possible. So when I was in a meeting with Commissioner Resnick, who's been extremely helpful, he's the head of the Division of Pretrial Detention and Services. And I was at a meeting with him, and I said, what if we were able to have a mobile van and park it right outside? And he said, we'd love that. So we've been working on that for a year. First, we had to find a place to find the van, which we did. And then I kept meeting with Commissioner Resnick so that we could bring the idea to some local foundations. And we did. So we are funded by 4 local foundations. And from that, I always work with a mobile professional force. So I like to have the highest quality professionals give service to our most vulnerable. And in order to do that, we don't have a clinic. We have individual providers. And I contract with physicians from mostly Johns Hopkins Bayview Medical Center and nurses who also work at Hopkins on the HIV ward, most of them. And so I assembled a team, and then we kept meeting with people at the jail so that we could partner with them. We always want to feel like we're partnering, not imposing. So we got the van, we have the staff, and we opened our doors.
So describe the scene to me. What happens when someone is released from jail and the van is there? First of all, I gather it's not a surprise. You've been spreading the word inside that when you leave,
we're here.
The van will be there.
Right. And we just opened. So it's still a process of getting the word out. People are released 24 hours a day. And actually, that's something we're trying to change. But they are released 24 hours a day. And so they come out in dribs and drabs. It's not like there's big groups of people. And even though we have flyers everywhere, even though we have business cards everywhere, I don't know how many people really know when they come out. So we have signs up right outside our van. We're there. We have food to offer, drinks, hot chocolate. And we're trying to make connections. So we enrolled our first patient last week. And he's really excited. He came over from drug court. He had only been in jail, like many people, for less than 24 hours. He wasn't sure why he was arrested, but he'd been in jail many times before. And he is someone who had an opioid use disorder. So they referred him to our van immediately. And now he's in treatment with us. And we had 3 people stop by today who are interested in our services. And so we've learned a lot by being on the street. There's a tremendous amount of need, just people walking by who can't figure out how they can link into services. And so we try to refer people for other needs as well. We are available to refer for mental health needs, for alcohol use disorders, and other addiction problems, because it's amazing with services that we have still how inaccessible they are to people that are really at sort of the most desperate.
So let me make sure I'm clear. Mm-hmm. What are the services that you offer?
We offer treatment for opioid use disorder, Suboxone medication,
treatment on the spot?
The medication, we give the prescription right on site. We can't have medication on our van. It's too dangerous.
But you can give a prescription.
We give a prescription. Mm-hmm. We are open 4 days a week from 7:30 in the morning to 11. We have a doctor twice a week. We're hoping to go to 3 days a week in a few months. And so the doctor and the nurse work together to do an intake assessment, do a little brief physical exam, and make sure the person's appropriate for the medication, that they want the medication, that they understand what it means to take the medication. And then right then and there, we give them a training on how to begin the medication at home. They then get their prescription. We pay if they don't have Medicaid or another insurance. BHLI, part of our grant funding is that we can pay for that medication until we get them linked to an insurance program. And if they do have insurance but have a copay, we pay for that as well. And then, so they go to the pharmacy where we have that agreement. They get their medication. They go home. We will have the nurse call them that day and the next day to make sure everything's okay. Plus, they have the nurse's phone number and the doctor's phone number. And then JR will be a peer to call people every day to make sure that they're okay. And we then try to get them connected to our other groups and other programs. But in the meantime, getting them started on the medication as soon as possible is the most important thing. And that's what we do.
It's Deborah Agus, Executive Director of the nonprofit Behavioral Health Leadership Institute, BHLI, which has started waiting outside the Baltimore City Detention Center to offer those leaving jail an immediate connection to mental health and substance abuse treatment. And in addition to healthcare professionals, one important part of the team, which you mentioned, is a peer advocate. Joining us to talk about that role is William Jones, who goes by JR. JR, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You are a peer advocate at Dee's Place, which is an alcohol and drug addiction recovery support center. What do you do at Dee's Place?
Part of my role at Dee's Place is to help people to get into the program, to make sure the people that get into the program are comfortable too, because a lot of times people that come into the program are not sure what they want to do. So by me being a peer recovery, I help them at ease. We talk like a one-on-one counselor, and then we do the intake, we do the paperwork. For me, it's totally giving back.
Giving back in what way?
Giving back to the community, society itself, from being a recovering addict myself.
Tell me about your path to recovery.
Oh, my path to recovery was hard. It really was hard because I put my own self into treatment. That was hard. To the day I died, I thought that I was going to get high. I even told people that I would get high to the day I died. But little did I know, I changed my mind, I changed my faith, and my will to live. So, these places I found recovery. I came in, got into the program with Project Connection, came through the program with flying colors. I would say the staff was phenomenal, was a great help. Although I took the medication, the staff really helped me get through. And here I am today, still with Dee's Place, now employed with Dee's Place and still working with Project Connection.
How long has this that part of your path taken? When did you start at Dee's Place?
As far as being on a program, I would say 8.5 years.
And you've been a peer counselor for how long?
Since 2013.
Deborah, why is peer advocacy so important?
Peer advocacy is used in many programs besides our program now. And having someone like JR who can really build trust and work with people and talk about where they've been and where he's been and where they're going is key. And we want to also bring people into a community of support. We've been able to start a new program where we have people celebrate medication as part of a peer support group. So I know you've probably heard of Narcotics Anonymous or AA. They are built on peer support. That's what they are, is peer support recovery groups. But many of them are welcoming to people on medication, but the general philosophy of NA and the national program is still not quite as accepting as medication as we'd like it to be. And for people we're working with, our patients, for them to have a peer support group that celebrates medication and supports people on medication as being in recovery, that's essential if they're going to stay on medication and be able to move on with their lives. And JR, as you can see and you can hear, is such a warm, caring person and also so competent.
JR, what role did medication play or does medication play in your recovery?
Well, it played a big role in my recovery due to the fact that it helped me. It broke my urges. And I explain to a lot of people when they do come into the program, you know, it's always to let help help you. Because a lot of people come into the program thinking only that the medication helps, which it do. We also have to do a lot of work with the medication. It's just not the medication itself.
Deborah, BHLI's van outside the jail, very
right.
New. What are your goals for that?
Our goals are to build up a regular clientele. We could serve each week probably 15 to 30 people because we're there 4 days a week. What we are assuming is that people will get started on our van. So we are right there when they walk out. We're right there when we walk the street. And we get them engaged in treatment and comfortable with treatment and engaged with a peer. We assume then that they will move to one of our other sites or a similar site who has a philosophy like ours. We're a low threshold harm reduction program, which means we are meeting people where they are. Sometimes it means they might still be using alcohol. Sometimes it means they might be using cocaine. We will continue to work with them. We don't have a rigid structure. It's most important to us to keep them coming into our program engaged with us. Once they stabilize and are doing really well, we transition people to a primary care clinic so that they are really integrated into the whole health system. Many people we treat not only have addiction problems, but have very serious health problems, including HIV and hepatitis C often. And they are suspicious of the healthcare system, or they just haven't had a chance to connect other than the ER maybe or the hospital. We hope to have a full spectrum of people coming in. We hope to help as many people as we can become a regular part of our community.
I'm really grateful to you both for telling us about it, and good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Deborah Agus is the executive director of the nonprofit Behavioral Health Leadership Institute. JR is a peer advocate at Dee's Place. We have a link to the Institute at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.